This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Hey, everyone. It's Estelle Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way the doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century. And that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your slow drip of music news and cultural mergers. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. You're listening to Bet from Tinashe's new record, Aquarius, which John Caramonica wrote about last week in Arts and Leisure.
That new ooze.
The new ooze.
That ooze.
The news.
Yeah, ooh.
The news.
The news.
John, Tinashe is part of something that's bigger than her.
Yes.
And what is that something?
Well, she is part of something that's bigger than her, which is this movement within R&B towards slow tension, gothic overtones, yeah. Darkness, mm-hmm. sort of a pulpy sensuality.
Yeah.
What Tinashe does that's different than the other folks who are doing this kind of stuff, well, is two things, really. One, she's playing on a different field. Like, she's on a major label. Her actual crossover record that's been really successful, which is Two On, which has been a big hit this past summer, is probably the least typical song on her album, Aquarius.
That's right, yes.
Probably one of the two least typical songs.
Yeah.
But you can see her vocal tendencies at play on that song in a way that I think does share commonality with what she does on the record, the rest of the album. So she's playing on a different field, but she's also very, very concerned with songcraft.
Yeah.
She is fundamentally a pop R&B singer, whereas most of the people who are doing, you know, left field, experimental, future looking R&B at the time, at the moment, mm-hmm. Don't seem at all preoccupied with that. And what's interesting is to see her use Two On as
a hook to get him in.
Yeah. What is it when you sort of leapfrog all these commercial instincts and say, oh, I'll take you with me, and then I'm going to land you in this very unfamiliar stew of stuff.
Right.
There is no major label R&B record or pop record, really, that sounds like Aquarius. Certainly hasn't been the last few years. Maybe the closest you had were albums by Ciara. But Ciara is, I think, sort of less of a singer than Tinashe, even though Tinashe's not a belter. But Ciara's less of a singer. And also, Ciara is, I always think of her as a dancer first and a singer second.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Tinashe is both, but I think she's leading with vocals.
Well, R&B, just sort of as a symbol or semantically, or, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's kind of a strange and contested place.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of singers who are, a lot of sort of like singers who could be called R&B and are called R&B of this new mold, you know, who prefer to go really slow, reject the term R&B and don't like it as applied to their music, because they think it's inapt and it's limiting, and also perhaps it's just It's racialized. It's unthinking.
It's calcified.
What I'm asking is just the idea of R&B, does it sort of mean the past?
It doesn't to me.
Right.
I think that's, again, that's very much in the ear of the beholder, you know? And it's the same thing with hip-hop or indie rock or sort of any of these genre categories where you can point to what people would perceive of as a golden age.
But in hip-hop, there are a lot more rappers who are very proud to be part of the tribe of hip-hop. And they don't feel like being called hip-hop is going to limit them or drag them down.
No, although I do think that hip-hop as a genre is like a far more commercially successful genre. So why wouldn't you want to be a part of it?
Right.
Whereas R&B has been marginalized systematically over the years, partially through racial categorization and partially through the sort of borrowing of some of the key elements into pop music.
Yeah,
I mean, you can make a case that the sort of the most popular R&B singer of 2014 is Beyonce, and then if you want to put Beyonce to the side, the second most popular R&B singer is Ariana Grande.
Right.
Ariana Grande is not out here advertising herself as an R&B singer.
Right.
Even though she fundamentally is. In my mind, Justin Bieber is an R&B singer.
Chris Gaines. just to go back there.
Absolutely.
For a second.
On tour now. On tour now. Yeah. On tour now. Playing the Apollo, undoubtedly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But to me, R&B has this issue where it hasn't been able to hold on to its stars. Labels, major labels, haven't really been investing in it.
That's right.
So you have a sort of a fair amount of kind of low-level R&B stars. You have R&B stars who basically are popular with black audiences but don't at all cross over to white audiences. You know, your Jaheims, your Tanks,
yep.
Like folks like this.
Yeah. And you have the reverse.
White singers who don't, yeah.
Or even black singers who have a huge appeal to white audiences.
Who are you thinking?
Well, this is not like, it's not like they're limited to white audiences, mm-hmm. but, you know, what about Frank Ocean?
Sure. Yeah. Although Frank Ocean got way more run on black radio, on urban radio, than I think many people expected. His songwriting proved to be really durable, and it was hard. A lot of hip-hop radio stations are not really hip-hop radio stations. What they are is sort of like up-tempo hip-hop and R&B stations. Like, there are very few sort of pure rap stations left. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these stations really struggle to find R&B that works with the hip-hop they're playing.
Right.
Frank Ocean proved to be someone who could fit into that mix pretty well. Although now he seems to be disappeared off the mm-hmm. face of the planet. Mm-hmm. So who knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But Frank Ocean certainly got a tremendous amount of traction. But I'd say on both sides. I'd say more so than anticipated. But you look at someone like Tinashe, and Tinashe, to me, hasn't fully cracked the pop mainstream.
Right.
Chuan is a successful record, but it's not like a top five pop hit, even though in my ears it should be. I think what people will find when they show up to her album is something that's far odder than what she's advertising.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about her record, Aquarius, which is a really impressive record.
Mm-hmm.
And let's subtract those more pop-oriented tracks,
yeah.
like Tuon, All Hands,
All
on,
Hands
Deck.
On Deck.
Let's talk about the stuff that is this kind of new, viscid, slow
stuff. I was just going to say viscous.
Now, yeah. How did we get here? Let's have a little
sure.
a little best pocket history of,
yes.
of Uzi R&B.
I mean, we got here via a lot of things, but we got here in, say, the last immediate reference points. We got here via Sade. We got here via Aaliyah. We got here via early Janet Jackson. We got here via singers who are not overpowering vocalists, even though Sade can sing her butt off.
Mm-hmm.
But people who used spread and texture and almost, I would say, drone
mm-hmm.
as part of their arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
Whisper, even. So all of these, frankly, anti-R&B approaches to R&B. I was talking about R&B last week in the context of actually this article, and I was so much of R&B as we've experienced it through the, you know, 70s, 80s, and 90s, is there's this tension between the church and the dance floor.
Of course, right.
Yes,
like when we think of R&B, I mean, not all the way back to Sam
no,
Cooke or
right.
whatever, but when we're talking about like 80s,
yeah,
that
sure.
kind of thing. Yes, there is this big gospel influence.
Sure. And then there's, you know, post-disco, there's a very big nightclub influence.
Right.
Now, what you see in the work of someone like Tinashe excluding her poppier songs, is R&B that's identifiably R&B that, to me, fundamentally rejects both of those influences.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that her peers, and if we're going to talk about peers, you know, we're talking about smaller acts. We're talking about Kalayla. We're talking about SZA. You know, we're talking about folks like this who are not particularly interested in songcraft or less interested in songcraft.
Right.
SZA maybe more than Kalayla, but who are sort of content to stand on stage or be on record and kind of let you get lost a little bit.
Yeah.
Tinashe doesn't want you to get lost. Tinashe wants to make it very clear that she's going to take you from the beginning through the middle to the end.
Right.
But these are not shouty church records, and they're slow. They're not meant for, you know, I don't do a BPM count, but they're not Chris Brown BPMs.
Right.
It's her transition single after Two On is Pretend, which has A$AP Rocky on it, which is sort of like, oh, it's good. We'll put Rocky on it. Maybe it'll get on the radio. And it has been on the radio, but it's so much slower than most things that are on the radio mm-hmm. that you really stop and notice it when it comes on. And I wonder if that's going to be that's going to doom it, basically, to be irrelevant.
Let's try another Tinashe slow jam,
yeah.
Or for her, normal jam.
Yes, exactly.
Bated Breath, which is Ritz Reynolds is the producer.
What if I told you that it was all in vain? Would it still hurt you? Would you still feel the said it's impossible.
Okay, Bated Breath. That's sort of like the new dark ambient R&B or something.
And it's great because I think there tends to be this issue. You talk about R&B being calcified, being stuck as a category. It needs an infusion of new ideas. It needs people who want to take the bones and put some new meat on it.
Yeah.
And when I hear this record, what I hear is someone... a singer and a set of producers who are interested in doing that.
Yeah.
They're not trying to make Neo records. You know, they're not trying to make Chris Brown records. They're not trying to make Rihanna records. And they're definitely not trying to make Beyonce records.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I think, a problem in R&B right now. And it's similar to the problem that there is in female hip hop, which is there's Nicki Minaj and then there's who? I mean, obviously Iggy Azalea for these purposes.
Mm-hmm.
She's a pop singer. She's a pop artist. There's Nicki Minaj and then there's who? Beyonce comes along, drops that album, and basically is like a gaseous substance that fills up every corner of the room.
Sure.
What does that mean for your mid-level R&B singers? What does that – Beyonce has probably the most current taste of any singer in the pop sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not the most, but she has very current taste. She's an exceptional singer.
Mm-hmm.
She's a marketing juggernaut. She's insanely famous. What are you supposed to do up against that?
Right.
Really, the only thing you can do is the exact opposite. And that's why I think Tinashe has had some success.
Right.
Because it presents an alternative.
So if you're going to call it R&B, you're...
I'm calling it R&B.
If you're going to call it R&B, you are acknowledging the capaciousness of R&B. You know, you're acknowledging the vastness of this area that is not hip-hop per se and is particularly good for sort of like slow black dance music.
I want to open up the doors again. You look at the two Billboard charts. There's the R&B hip-hop chart, which is the one that I refer to in my column, which is basically just no women. There's like a Nicki Minaj song here, Beyonce song there, and a couple of Tinashe things. That's it. No women. But then you look at like the R&B chart, which has like Marsha Ambrosius, you know, Lettucey or whatever, who are much more formal-minded singers, much more tradition-minded singers.
Yep.
I think there are a lot of fans of R&B who are really content with that option set.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, the idea that R&B needs to be reduced to that or reduced to the combination of that and Beyonce's sort of like mega pop experiments, that seems crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
If we're allowing all this experimentation and flexibility, I mean, I would say in rock, although we know no one actually does it anymore in rock, in hip hop and you know, in country, God forbid, you know, if we're allowing for that, why can't R&B open its doors back up and sort of take in these kind of like fallen children who, who want to do all this other stuff?
Sure.
But instead, I think you have an R&B that's very, still very shuttered. I think that maybe makes some folks who are making music like this feel like they don't want to be a part of it. Not just that they're not a part of it, but they don't want to be a part of it.
But now is the moment for sort of futuristic R&B.
I would think so.
And even to, you know, an Afrofuturistic R&B.
Absolutely.
Connected to a much larger tradition in American art.
The Afrofuturist streak, you trace it back decades, and I think it has... It runs parallel, of course, to R&B, and there were probably always outliers in the 70s and 80s and 90s of people who maybe you could have pegged in that futurist way. When I think of what's happening today at the sort of fringes of R&B, to me, it's an evolutionary step.
Yeah.
It's a rejection, but it's a rejection that's from a loyalist, not a rejection from an outsider. When I hear these records, these are people who clearly think hard about R&B. And think about where they can fit in and where they can innovate.
Well, let's change gears for a second and talk about somebody who actually rejects the term R&B. FKA Twigs, who put out her first full-length record not too long ago called LP1. FKA Twigs is English and, as of a couple of weeks ago, much more famous than she was before.
Forgot about that.
Yes. Seems to be dating a movie star.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Robert Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson's a pretty boy.
In any case, even before that, she was very high on a lot of people's radar because she was making, I mean, talking about Afrofuturism, this was pushing this tendency of slow, processional, austere to real lengths.
Past song structure, really.
Yes, past song structure.
This is something that I think goes back to her early, like when I saw her perform, whatever her first New York show was, at Glasslands, I was hungry at the end of that show because I was like, there's clearly an intelligence at work here.
Yeah.
Musical, bodily intelligence, obviously, because she's dancing is such an integral part of her show. But everything felt unfinished. And I don't want to be so close-minded that I can't see unfinishedness as its own aesthetic.
Yeah.
But I did feel like they were 70% of something.
Right. Well, it's incredible slow-release kind of music.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not – unlike Tinashe, as you were saying, Tinashe's position with the audience is like, I'm going to give you something that you will enjoy.
Yeah,
you know, I'm going to give you something that has a beginning, a middle, and an end and has a structure. With FKA Twigs, you're floating in space.
Yeah.
And there are some songs on this record with great buildups, actually, and kind of amazing payoffs. But they happen in places where you don't expect them, or they take a very long time. Mm-hmm. So are Tinashe and FKA Twigs, are they related? Are they different sides of the same coin? How do you compare them?
Well, to me, they're related for sure. In that I think – well, first of all, I think they're drawing upon the same influence pool. I also think that they are...
Janet Jackson,
Aaliyah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, they're drawing upon similar things.
Yeah. Although, you know, FKA Twigs would want you to believe that she's also influenced by, you know, Catholic liturgy and
undoubtedly
maybe even Kate Bush, you know, who knows?
Undoubtedly she is. Yeah. And I think, obviously, her singing style, her actual technique of singing has less to do with traditional R&B than Tinashe's.
Mm.
But I feel like her... It's intangible, but I do think something about her approach to songcraft does feel indebted to R&B.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sympathetic to her wanting to reject that because I think in rejecting that, I haven't delved deep into her rejection of the category. But I have to think that at least part of that is she's rejecting the racialization of her music.
Oh, I think that's entirely what it's about. Yeah,
right. But I think on top of that, it's sort of a missed opportunity because what – you can reject it and then say, actually, I'm R&B. I'm not R&B as you conceive of it or as it's historically been conceived.
I'm an R&B that you've never thought of.
Right,
before.
Exactly. I'm a hypothetical R&B. I'm an intangible R&B.
Right.
I'm an ineffable R&B.
Mm.
That's a real opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the space to me in which she exists. Mm-hmm. I think the production that she employs, the smoother end of the production that she uses is not that different from the rougher end of the production that Tinashe uses. Twigs.
Where Tinashe comes to her boundary of out-there-ness is where Twigs begins.
Up. Yeah. And I think Twigs has harder angles. You know, she's a little bit more austere, a little harsh. I think a little bit more harsh of a singer than Tinashe. But I do see them as sort of engaged in the same project, but with different toolkits.
Yeah.
An interesting thing, and we were talking about this just before we came on, was, you know, you look at them and you say, oh, well, they're very different. Tinashe is a former child actress. She was in a girl group. She's a Hollywood kid. Twigs is self-taught and, you know, comes from a weird town and like da-da-da.
And a video dancer.
Right. But they have this – they're both aware of the importance of how the body relates to music.
Right.
They're both theatrical
right.
In certain ways. They actually have more in common than their sort of like than their Google image searches would indicate.
Right. So from FKA Twigs' first full record, LP1, let's hear Pendulum.
I've got time, but you're tired of waiting. You only want me in hot spaces. I'll fill your gaps with people. I know no one's so lonely.
So, John, let's talk about sensuality.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the idea of sensuality as an almost a necessary part at this point of R&B and, like, advanced sensuality. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
A point I made in my piece about FKA Twigs a while back was that I listened to this record a whole lot of times, listened to it hard, tried to sort of bring it into my bloodstream as well as I could. And I felt like there's something I'm not getting. You know, what is the proper way to hear this? Is it like, is it in a church?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it whatever? And some very clever friend of mine said, no. You know, you're missing the point. This is bedroom music. That's it. That mm-hmm. is it. Mm-hmm. That is the number one purpose of this music.
Who's bedroom?
And so it makes me think, right, okay, well, you know, lots of music theoretically is bedroom music.
Sure.
That's a perfectly good application of music. But can
it's
you
also a good filter to know which bedrooms to be in and which bedrooms
that's
to
right.
not be in.
But can you stake the whole endeavor on making bedroom music?
No, I don't think so. What Twigs especially is doing is, and we're in the same way we're saying this is like an ineffable R&B, this is an ineffable sensuality. You talk about the sort of the church and the dance floor.
Yeah.
Both sensual spaces, both ecstatic spaces. You know, I can argue that love for God, gospel is some incredibly sensual music.
Sure.
And obviously dance floor music, body music, sensuality is sort of at the center.
Sure.
There is a cold sensuality in Twigs. I was really thinking hard about her lyrics. I'm not convinced she has a lot to say in terms mm-hmm. of words.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has a lot to say in terms of how she deploys a generally not that exciting array of words.
Well, for example, in the song Pendulum, there's the line, it's the first line of the song, I'm the sweet little lovemaker. Which it takes her about 15 seconds to say, mm-hmm. you know, because it's so drawn out. But that's sort of like, it's such an old-fashioned line.
Mm-hmm.
But the way she delivers it is almost like meta, you know?
No, exactly.
She's seeing it from a great height.
Yes.
And it's not the way Tinashe would do it.
No.
And it's not the way Tinashe, by the way, I think is there's a certain kind of sensual R&B purr that is quite cliche at this point. And I think Tinashe is, in a nice way, mostly free of that.
Yes.
And FKA Twigs is so free of it that she's on another planet, really.
Right. And free of it in a way that I think she has processed it, imbibed it, and dispensed with it.
Mm.
Not free of it that she never touched it. And I think that's why I'm more inclined to say she's within an R&B framework, albeit a completely outsider R&B framework.
Yeah.
Because I do think that stuff's in her. I don't think she's actively living with it or referencing it, but I do think it's in her. I do think it informs. I do think what she's doing is a rejection of the center. And it's not, like I said, it's not a rejection of an outsider. It's a rejection from a loved one.
Yeah.
It's a rejection from a native.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there hasn't been enough rejection going on in R&B? I mean, there's been a certain amount of rejection in hip-hop. There's been tons of rejection in other kinds of music.
R&B has to function. Historically, it has a social function. It almost has a political function.
Yes, it does.
So
much like gospel. And there's not a lot of rejection in gospel.
No rejection. Minor rejections. Peace to Tony. But the music is resistance to something else. R&B is the buttress against the outside world. It's a safe space for black politics. It's a safe space for black love, for black expression. That's how it exists. So splintering within that hasn't always gone particularly well. And frankly, the last big splinter moment that I can think of in this country is Neo Soul, which was not a splinter moment of futurists. It was a splinter moment basically of traditionalists who were trying to reclaim the center that they thought was being gotten away from with hip-hop.
Also, R&B, it's for adults, you know?
For sure.
R&B is for adults. A lot of people love hip-hop when they're younger, and then they get to a point where they say, oh, this isn't for me anymore, but I will have my R&B.
Those people are lame.
Are they?
Yeah. Listen to Young Thug.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
All right.
But doesn't it make you want to serve these people a new kind of R&B?
And again, I think you can contend that this possibility has always been there. And maybe what we're seeing now are audiences who are raised in R&B no longer need its politics or no longer demand that social function, but still want to find a future value in R&B. They don't want to experience it the way their parents experienced it or their older brothers experienced it, but they do want to experience it. Mm. And maybe that's what these artists are affording. Maybe that opportunity is what they're affording. It's tough to say. Like, to go back to Twiggs's rejection of being labeled as R&B, I have a tremendous amount of respect for it, but I also, like I said before, it feels a little bit like a missed opportunity to me. Mm-hmm. Because how great would it be if a bunch of people were piling in and saying, oh, we're jumping in the R&B pool and we're pushing the walls out. We're pushing them. We're breaking them down. We're pushing them out. That's what a fascinating moment.
Mm-hmm.
And in a weird way, it's been happening with men. It's happening with The Weeknd.
Yes.
It's happening with Drake.
Can't believe his name hasn't come up in this conversation.
There are moments on this Nosh album that very much just feel like leftover tracks from like the second Weeknd mixtape or third Weeknd mixtape.
Right.
But you look at what The Weeknd and Drake have done, not just for R&B, but also for hip hop in terms of the tempos and in terms of darkness and in terms of elasticity of the form.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, it's already been happening on a mainstream stage. Tinashe is really the first person to do it as a woman.
Sure.
But I also think because she's doing it as a woman, it has the potential to be that much more powerful and transformative.
Right.
Because there's the lane is clear. There's literally no one to compete with. Jhené Aiko? Mm. It's not. Mm. And, you know, it's probably worth mentioning, Jhené Aiko said something very mean to me on Twitter the other day.
Mm.
And I just want to say I appreciated it.
Mm,
and it was inaccurate, but also very much appreciated.
A learning experience?
Not for me.
Okay. Well, also, just can we talk about slowness in and of itself?
Sure.
You know, even back to DJ Screw.
Of course.
It's just a powerful tool.
Absolutely. It focuses attention.
It's scary.
It underscores.
But it doesn't really make hits.
So?
You know?
Great. We're post-hit. The Weeknd just sold out the Barclays Center. You think he's tripping off a hit?
So, The Weeknd. So it comes back to The Weeknd. If the new R&B people can have the career of The Weeknd, then they're set?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there are 10 of those careers to be had. But it certainly demonstrates that there is room and appetite for that kind of thing. It just requires more people to dive into the party.
Let's go out with one more track from FKA Twigs' record LP1. The song is Lights On. And John, I will see you at the next slow music party.
Okay.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. You can read John Caramonica on Tinashe and myself on FKA Twigs at nytimes.com/music. Our producers are Jeremy Egner and Jocelyn Gonzalez, and we will see you next week.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.